I'm K2 Romeo, India Whiskey.
My name is Dick,
and along with John, KC2 WGB, Paul, WS2N, and quite often with Hal, K6 DPZ, we run something called the Technical Net. It's the gathering of curious people, the inquisitive people, the ones who are doing some truth searching. Here we go. We're trying to teach each other the idiosyncrasies, and boy, there's a lot of them, of radio circuits and radio propagation and transmitters and antennas and feed lines. The books do a mediocre job, the schools do a mediocre job of really teaching that in useful engineering form, from my point of view. And so by way of the TechNet, over the last 33 years in 1 month, I think we began September of 1982. That's 33 and a fraction years ago. This will be TechNet number 1580 of the series. The space report, when Paul gives that to us, it will be space report number 173. So we're racking up some interesting history. Let me drop. Quite often people are not able to hang in there for the whole TechNet, which usually lasts for 4 hours for the last 20-some-odd years. Starts at 8 p.m. local time and goes until midnight, and some people can't stay up that late. But there's all kinds of ways that you can play back the TechNet in delayed time. Mike Perry, KC2NJI, has a beautiful website at www.amateurradio.tangovictor. You go there and the last 10 years of TechNet are recorded, thousands of hours worth. And so you choose the right year, the right month, the right week, and it's in 1 hour reels. So there's 4 or 5 reels per TechNet. And what people will do is put it on their tape recorder or a portable device of some kind and play it back to them while they're on the train, driving to work, on their noon hour, at their coffee break, whatever. Let me drop. Now that's mic number one, and there's mic number two also, another website associated with the TechNet that gives lots of good information, and that's limarktechnet.com. And mic number two and mic number one have a number of the past articles that have been written about TechNet information. You can get copies of a Smith chart, for instance, and find out some of the nuances of standing wave ratio, for instance. Let me drop. The TechNet follows an extremely loose schedule. Loose meaning that we go with the flow. We have a schedule, which I'm telling you about, and periodically that schedule will be violated like crazy. I mean, the first section of the schedule is in the vicinity of an hour. That's where we take general questions. People sign in with the call letters, their name, because they do have a question or a comment. And if we get hot and heavy on some real subject and everybody gets excited, there are times when that section will go on for 2 and a fraction hours, even though we've allocated 1 hour for it. When people really get rolling, I think there's no reason to stop them. If they got the enthusiasm, let them go. Let me drop. After the first section, John, KC2WGB, he's the man who mans the mailbag. The mailbag really means people who don't yet have their ham license, or don't yet have the right equipment so they can talk to us directly, or maybe they're a little bit bashful, although ham radio operators shouldn't be bashful in front of a mic. That's one of the things we get pretty good at after a while. But they can't talk to us directly, and by way of sending John, KC2WG, an email, a snail mail, pigeon droppings, whatever, they get their question answered. They get their question posed, and John chooses 2, 3, 4 of those, and we go through them. John also monitors the echo link, so if people are being cut off, if we're a little bit too excited and we don't wait for all 4 beeps in between each transmission. You're supposed to wait for all 4 beeps. Let me drop. And so the people out of the area who have trouble signing in because of the delays of the system for long-distance QSOs with this particular repeater, by way of the Echo Link website that John monitors, we know about it. And people also sometimes send him questions live, so to speak. After the mailbag, we go to Paul, WS2N, who is our space expert, and he gives us the latest on what National Aeronautics and Space Administration is doing. And almost always I asked him, what's the latest range of Voyager? Voyager is the most long-range QSO piece of electronics that mankind has ever created. Let me drop. After 35 years or so since launch, Voyager, with its 6 watts of output, is out there 12 billion miles away, moving at something like 40,000 miles an hour away from us, away from the sun, away from the solar system, 3 times the distance of Pluto. And that 6-watt transmitter is still being copied over 12 billion miles. And miles per watt, that's obviously a record breaker of all time. 6 watts of output approximately, which is a QRP by ham radio standards, 12 billion miles. Use the right kind of equipment, microwave equipment with precise aiming of antennas, and a good-sized dish at Goldstone, California, the 240-foot dish in Fort Irwin is where Goldstone really is. I was there, and I visited that dish at 2 o'clock one morning. That's the whole story. Let me drop. And that's by far the weakest signal you can imagine. That path length, I mean, we amateurs, when we're talking with our handy-talkie to a repeater, the real path loss between your rubber duck and that repeater is something in the vicinity of 100 decibels of loss. Voyager is overcoming 300 decibels of loss when it transmits 12 billion miles and we get that signal. It's the best piece of proof that I can think of a philosophy I have acquired over the years, which is you transmit a radio signal. It goes to every single cubic centimeter of this universe. The only thing left to discuss is how long does it take to get there at the speed of light? How strong will the signal be when it gets there? Are you using the right equipment that's able to receive it? The signal never goes to zero. It goes everywhere. It gets weaker and weaker. You're going to use more and more heroic electronics in order to suck up that signal, just like Goldstone does do with Voyager. But that signal never disappears. Lots of people don't know that. Let me drop. Okay, at this time we're going to take check-ins for people who do have a question or a comment. After 33 years, you don't have to sign in letting us know you're there. By now, we believe somebody is listening. After 33 years, and the TechNet has never had a session that I know of where nobody signed in, nobody had a question. There were some nights that are not quite as heavy as others. So if you do have a question or a comment, give us your call letters, your name. Try to remember to give me your name because I'm kind of forgetful. Followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. So I'm going to take check-ins right now for people who do have a question or comment. Please give me your call letters and name. K2LIW listening.
WB2 Conference.
Ed.
Rich. And yes.
Peter. Okay, that was a quadruple. I heard Peter, PAA. I heard WB2. The WB2, please repeat your call and name, sir.
WB2 Golf X-Ray Mike. Rich.
Golf X-Ray Mike, Rich. Pete, Mr. PAA, I know I should know you very well. Please give me your prefix, Pete.
Whiskey Bravo, WB2.
Okay, Whiskey Bravo, 2, PAA. Haven't heard from you in quite a long time, Pete. Okay, I know there was other people trying to sign in. Who were the others?
T2PYT, Ed, yes.
KD2JGK, Mark, yes.
Okay, KC2PYT. Ed, we got you. And Ed's a new father. Congratulations. Mr. K, I think it's Kilo Golf 2, Golf Golf Kilo. Is that correct, Mark?
That's Kilo Delta 2 Juliet Golf Kilo. Name is Mark.
Okay, Kilo Delta 2 Juliet Golf Kilo. We got you, Mark. Okay, so far for sign-ins, we've got GXM. Why can't I read my own handwriting? Okay, Pete, Ed, and Mark. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters right now. We have more than enough to get started. Whiskey Bravo 2, Golf X-ray Mike, please start off, sir. K2RAW. And repeat your name. I can't read my own writing.
Thank you, Rich and the TechNet. This is Rich, WB2GXM. I want to thank Rich, N2EO, and yourself for directing me to the Cobra Ultralight. I bought my Junior. It's sitting in the box. And by the way, the website for this is the author's, the creator's website, Kilo1JulietEchoKilo.com. Now, my plan is to install this ultralight in my attic, run good quality coax up to the attic from the shack, and connect to the antenna's balanced feed line through a 4-to-1 Balun and probably a remote tuner. Joe, K1JEK, has advised me to use all 81 feet of the balanced feed line, which is going to be interesting in a 15-foot high attic. Let me drop. So I was thinking, if I run the ultralight north to south, which is where it will fit, and then take the balanced feed line and run it in a 20-foot zigzag east to west with about 6 inches of spacing between each layer and a gentle curve at the corners, will that work? W2RAW in the group, WBTGXM.
Okay, very fine and good copy, Rick. Rick, your audio is about 60 dB lower than I wish it was. So you could either speak closer to the mic or find a way of turning your audio up a bit. And as you know, at each one of the hammer rammers that Limark holds, Andy, the BA2CDL, brings down all of his test equipment by which he can give a precise setting of your volume control. So, as I said, your audio is a little bit low, but thank goodness your carrier is nice and clean and we heard everything. That Cobra antenna, which Barry, N2MB, and I helped install at Rich's house, N2EO's house, that's a rather nice design, a very compact antenna covering 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10. I'm not sure, but I think it might even cover some of the so-called walk bands. Let me drop. I forgot the exact distance, but it's considerably shorter than an ordinary 80-meter dipole-like structure, which would be 132 feet long. I seem to remember it's something like 79 feet long. And it is my belief, if I remember correctly, that the recommended feed line for it is 450 ohm ladder line. I think that's the way it's designed, intended for ladder line. And the nice thing about ladder line is that it can tolerate a ridiculous amount of standing wave ratio. It has the lowest loss of any kind of transmission line that you're likely to ever use, unless you buy inch and 5/8 Andrew Heliacs at $3 a foot or $5 a foot. And inch and 5/8 coax cable, which is a couple of pounds a foot, you're not likely to install that in your attic, if you know what I mean. So the ladder line does a beautiful job, but there's a catch. Let me drop. And that is, to get full performance out of the ladder line, you've got to obey a couple of slightly difficult rules. In the case of coax cable, you can lay it up against the ductwork, you can bend it in all kinds of ways, you can coil it, you can do all kinds of things. In the case of ladder line, it's a little bit more persnickety. Gives you very low loss, that's the good news, but you got to be kind of careful. You don't lay it flat against any metal. Don't make any really sharp bends. You can lay it against a metallic object for an extremely short distance, a couple of inches. That doesn't do very much. And the ladder line itself, once you're feeding that Cobra antenna with the ladder line, the length of the ladder line doesn't matter, as long as you've got a way of taking your 50-ohm transmitter and feeding the 450-ohm ladder line, which you could do with a homebrew half-wave coax balun, one band at a time. There are various baluning structures you can buy, but the ladder line itself, when it's used correctly, absolutely does not radiate. So I'm not quite sure why you want to lay it in some particular direction and zigzag it. Give me a couple of words on what your thinking was on that one there, Rich. WB2GXM, shout in the mic a little bit there, Rick. K2RIW, the TechNet.
Hey, Rick. Well, I'm still using HTs here, so hopefully this is better. I was advised by Joe, the creator of the antenna, to use all 81 feet, which, and he says, he actually told me to lay it in a loose coil on the attic floor, which I thought was very unusual. So, if I don't have to use all 81 feet, all the better. If I do, I would be separating each zigzag by about 6 inches, which is hopefully enough room to prevent the line from coupling to itself or to the antenna. Back to you.
Okay, I heard everything you said, Rich, but that last transmission, your audio was even lower in volume than it was on the first transmission. I'm not quite sure what you did, but you're giving us less audio. Maybe it's the battery running down of your handy talkies, which I think you said you're using. When it comes to stacking ladder line in loose coils, 6 inches is too severe. I think you could stack that ladder line as close as inch and a half, before you would get any significant problems. If you do want to use all 81 feet, and I'm not quite sure why that's required, if you're using a 4-to-1 Balun, which that's going to jump it up to, 200 ohms, or maybe even a higher Balun, I guess it's a 6-to-1, using the right kind of a Baluning device to stop up the impedance, and using an antenna tuner, the antenna tuner does not have to be remote. In the case of ladder line that goes directly to the antenna, to put a remote antenna tuner right at that location, most antenna tuners, particularly the remote ones, are not made for ladder line. They're made for coax cable. The ladder line itself is so low in loss that by feeding it at the transmitter, by putting the antenna tuner at the transmitter end, you're going to be getting 98% of the performance, if you know what I mean. And a very interesting experiment you could do would be to start off using all 81 feet, like the manufacturer recommended. At some later time, cut the ladder line to a much shorter length. The nice thing about ladder line is that even though you've cut it and it looks a little bit homely, you can definitely take those pieces, overlap them a little bit, solder it back together, and you'll get full performance. So you can easily reestablish the exact length that you had. To try to do that with coax cable without putting in a whole bunch of connectors and adapters would be very difficult. With a ladder line, you can do that. Let me drop. And if you do decide to coil it, as the manufacturer recommended, and you're laying it against a wooden floor or against the joists of the attic of your house, no problem. If you set it down on a very dense metallic shelf of some kind, that I don't recommend. You'll be if you bring metallic objects within, let me pick a number, quarter inch, half inch of the actual twin leads, the wires of that ladder line, you're starting to disturb its impedance. You've got to do it for a significant length before bad things happen, but still, I think you see that it's worth putting forth the effort of using that ladder line because it's so extremely low in loss. And as I said, to repeat, I'm positive you can put the antenna tuner with the right kind of a Baluning device at the shack end. Over to you, Rich. Kilo Delta 2, here we go, WB2 GXM, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Thank you, Rick. I'll take your advice, and I will try all of these things, and I will be upgrading to better radios in the very near future. So, K2RIW and the TechNet, Rich, WB2GXM. Thanks.
Quite a bit nicer audio that time, Rich. I think you spoke closer to the mic, and that's getting closer to the right volume for that handy-talkie. Please check back with us periodically and let us know as you run these experiments of cutting it and finding various ways of feeding it and installing it in your attic. If it works well or doesn't work well, in either case, come back and tell us what you find, because that's an antenna that's slowly becoming popular as of what Rich N2EO has started, and it looks to me like it gives you a lot of performance, a lot of bang for the dollar, and a lot of performance for the amount of visualization, so to speak. It's a by my standards, a nearly invisible wire-like antenna up in the air if you decide to put it outside the house. I think the neighbors won't see it. We amateurs look for wire, and we see it immediately. Your normal neighbors do not see wire. You can put up as many wire antennas as you like. The best proof of that, let me drop it, is that every one of our residential streets, every 150 feet, you've got a utility pole with a zillion wires stuck in between all those utility poles. They've been there for so many years, we do not see them anymore. A person from Europe that has underground wiring will come to the United States and say, how can you tolerate all of that ugliness? To which we all say, what are you talking about? It's been there forever. We don't even see it. Turns out man is a very adaptive animal, and you can get used to almost anything, if you know what I mean. Okay, Pete's the next guy. We haven't heard from him in a long time. So you've been out there making a fortune now, Pete? WB2PAA, K2IW and TechNet. You got it, Pete.
Good evening, Dick, and you're at K2IW, WB2PAA. I'm wanting to get a generator for your house. I had an electrician put in a transfer switch. He put in a four-prong switch, and the generator I'm thinking of getting is hot with a three-way plug. And right now my plug is a four-way plug. And in addition to this is to do a setup, but Honda doesn't have it. And that's a very good sideways because it's an electronic furnace. Back to you.
Okay, you've described the fact that you're installing the generator, and you've described some of the techniques by which you're installing it. I'm not quite sure I know what your question is, Pete. So tell us what your question is. Back to you, Pete. K2LIW and the TechNet.
It's pretty much two parts. One, a socket that hooks up the generator for the full plug. I'd like to buy is a Honda has a two-way plug too. So I wonder if there's an adapter from a four-way plug to a three-way plug that I could just buy an adapter. And just wondered how dry fuel conversion kits are doing, if they're not good enough to are they too dangerous, and I can't find a generator that has tri-fuel, a good size on it. Over.
Pete, you've got nice, clean audio, but too much of it. Lucky for me, you're in Huntington, and I'm hearing you very loud on the input, and I'm hearing you 100% of the time on the input. You're only coming through the repeater 80% of the time. 20% are dropouts as you speak loud, so an awful lot of what you said other people are not hearing, even though I'm hearing it. So the main thing about your Honda generator is it's got, if I understand correctly, a three-prong plug, and the wiring of your house is a four-prong plug, or vice versa, and you are asking, is there an adapter that you know of that can adapt from one to the other? And that's one way of looking for an adapter. Another approach, I guess, would be to rewire the plug on the end of the cable, the pendant cable that has the wrong kind of a plug. I've done some rewiring, and that's not too difficult. I wouldn't recommend making a homebrew adapter. I don't know if anybody has knowledge of an adapter you can buy between three-prong and four-prong 220-volt line, which is code-approved. You guys out there have got a lot more smarts on this one than I do. Please give us your call letters right now if you know about such a thing. That's the first question of Pete's. Anybody out there with some knowledge, give us your call letters. K2LIW in the TechNet.
WA2PJF, Vito Bayshore.
Yeah, there's the man. Vito, he's our expert from Home Depot. And he's the guy who's very diligent and takes all the courses that Home Depot will give you so that, you know, all the code things with reference to wiring. So what's your recommendation on this one, Vito? Vito, you've got it. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Well, the first thing, I have a very difficult time knowing what he's saying because he keeps cutting out.
So I got about 50% of what he said, but you seem to have copied it. But I'm trying to understand the question. He has a generator, okay? Another generator, depending on the manufacturer and the amount of power and so forth of this generator and the design and layout and so forth. There are different ports, okay? You have the line voltage, 120 volts at 15 amps, some are 20 amps. And you have the round ones that have NEMA numbers on them, National Electrical Manufacturer Association, like L1430, L1420, etc. The 14 signifies, let me drop. When you get to the 1420, 1430, it's a four-conductor plug receptacle, at 30 amps or 20 amps. There's also a 620, there's a 520, depends on the NEMA number. And again, the 20 is the average, is a 30, etc. The 6 normally has three conductors. And you have the ground, which is necessary, and you'll have, if it's 240 volts, it'll be active leg 1 and active leg 2. We call it phase A and B, but 240 volts available. Then you have the 14 series with the four conductors, and you have a neutral associated here now, and two activated legs, and a ground. Now, the adapters are something else again, okay? Usually, what you'll need is, if you use the generator for 240 volts, okay, he'll need something with only two legs and a ground, because there is no neutral in 240 that's used, other than if you were using a washing machine, a dryer or a stove, where one of the activated legs, let me drop. One of the activated hot legs and the neutral are being used to operate lights and a motor to rotate the drum at 120 volts. And the other two are used for the heating elements. And the same with the stove for lights and so forth and the heating element. The generator transfer unit itself that he's going to purchase or install, okay, they come in different sizes and amperages, okay? And they do, usually, the ones we have in the store, do have the NEMA 14 series with the four conductors. And you can get these, there's a C connector, there's the R connector, and there's the P connector. P as in plug, R as in receptacle, and C as the connector that goes between to make an extension, to make it longer. It's a female that mounts on the end of the cord. You have to line those up accordingly, leg to leg, conductor to conductor, to get something that, as you had said yourself, and you are somewhat correct, you have to make up something. So you can go from a four-conductor to a three-conductor, if that's what you need, eliminate one of the phases, or eliminate the neutral, okay, which is the white leg, and then use the two phases for 220 or the white one hot leg and the ground for 120 application. Usually, when you're using generators, I tell all the customers, try your very best to get away from any applications for 240 volts. Forget about your stove and your dryer. Just stay with 120 volt simplification, okay, where it's only two conductors and a ground. The ground is very important. Let me drop. The generator transfer unit, 9 times out of 10, the ones we carry have four conductors. So it's no big deal. You can make those up. Another thing, when you install this generator transfer unit, okay, it goes right next to the fuse panel. It's got a short tail, maybe about 3 feet long, if that, with all the conductors. And normally you have six switches in line for six different circuits, or sometimes there's one's a double pole with a bar across it, again for 240 application, which is really not a good idea, but however, it can be used, of course it can. And you have four other single phase circuits. I refer to them as phases, but you know, when you get involved with the home of today, it's really single phase, even though it's two different voltages, A, I call it A and B, not 1 and 2. It's one single winding on the transformer with a center tap. The center tap is your neutral, that's your neutral, actually, coming into the panel. It leaves on the cable that holds the two conductors, which is the ground. Then when it comes to the fuse panel, it is now becomes the neutral leg. And the separate ground is applied, which goes to your water pipe in your basement. I don't know, am I making sense here? Let me give it back to you, Richard. WA2PJF.
The comment, Dick. Yeah, you're giving us a lot of very good information, Vito. Let's see what Eric wants to add to this, because he's worked with a lot of motor generator sets. Eric, go ahead. KE2EJ, K2IW, and TechNet.
I just want to point out one thing from the original question, and that is most generators today, if they've got 240 available, it's always a 4-pin socket that you're plugging into. And he's saying that he's plugging into a 3-pin socket, and generally in the past and even today, those are usually 30 amps at 120 volts. There's usually not 240 there. So, you know, he's trying to go from a 3-pin to a 4-pin. And I would ask the question, do you really have 240 volts to start with? That's the big question. That's all I wanted to say. K2RIW, K2J.
KC2MDP.
Go ahead, Steve. KC2MDP. Because I think you're in this business also.
Very good, Dick. Yeah, Honda generators, a lot of the Honda generators are 120 only. Got a question for him. Does the outlet on the generator, it looks like an oversized 120 volt receptacle. Back to you.
Yeah, Pete, back off on the microphone, Pete, and describe the output connector that you're trying to mate with on the generator. And before I pass that over to you, by way of Hurricane Gloria and the arrangement that Airborne Instruments Laboratory had, we bought 550 4-kilowatt motor generator sets, Earth Energy Systems. Winco was the brand name that we bought because it was a good deal at the time, that ran on all three fuels, liquid propane, natural gas, and gasoline. And it also had a gas regulator and an electric starter. It had a lot of good features. So 550 of those got installed, and I was writing something called the Generator News every week, in which I was giving people our so-called customers, our employees that were buying these things. I was giving them all kinds of advice. And some of the strongest advice was make sure that when you use one of these motor generator sets that it is outside of your house. Don't even think about putting it inside of your house with any kind of exhaust piping and ducting and whatever. It's an outdoor machine. Make sure it's located far enough away from the house that not a chance that any of the exhaust can come back into the house. And do try to establish a frame-to-ground good grounding, because if something should go wrong with the wiring, there's a slim possibility that the generator, the case of the generator, can come 120 volts above Earth, and you touch it when you're standing in wet soil. That could be kind of a dangerous, as you can tell. So describe that connector for us, Pete. WB2PAA, wait a minute, WB2PAA, K2LAW in the TechNet. You've got it, Pete.
Okay, I hope this is a little better. Is that a little better, Dick?
Fantastic. Now there was no dropout on that whole transmission, so please describe that connector, Pete. You've got it, Pete.
Okay, it's an L14 socket out of your transfer switch. It's the standard, I guess, four-prong plug. But the generator I want to buy is a Honda UV3000. And that has a three-way plug on the front of your generator, which I believe is 120 volts. And I think with the L14 is set up to be 240. I'm not running anything on 240 volts. I just am running 110. So I hope that helps you. Over.
Vito again.
Yeah, that helps a lot. Vito, I'm going to pick up with in a second. That helps a lot. A slight problem you've got is that the house is wired as if you're using it on 240 volts. Half of your house is on the A circuit of 110, call it the left side of the center tap of the main transformer, your pole pig that's feeding your house, and the B side is the other half of your house. So if you feed only one of those circuits, some of the things in your house are not going to be electrified, and that can become a little bit unpleasant. Vito, when I pass it back to you, I know you're going to have to give us a lot more information. One of the main things I would like to know, it's very obvious to me that you've got a lot of information. You work with Home Depot directly, where they've got all the parts sitting on the shelf, and you can make advice. So my question is going to be, please tell Pete which store of Home Depot you are located at and which days of the week you're there, because I'm pretty sure that Pete is going to want to see you face-to-face. W2PJF, our electronic our power expert, KTRIW and TechNet, you got it, Vito.
That's WA2PJF. I'm out on disability right now. I have a heart condition. I'll be back for another week or two. I've been out for almost 3 months. I'll be back soon. Very simple. The gentleman who made mention about the generators, he's correct. Depends. A lot of them are three conductors at 120 volts with a rack configuration. It's probably a NEMA of 520, 620 at 20 volts, or a 630 at three conductor at 30 amps, depending. Okay, he's correct when he said that. The other gentleman who made comments. However, your generator transfer unit, that particular unit, usually, as I mentioned, two of the little bars, I call them sissy switches. They have a bar across it that two of the levers, I should say, levers, are ganged for 240-volt application. So when you have that four-conductor arrangement there, you do have that facility for 240 volts, phase one, A and B. But your generator, if you're buying this particular Honda, as you mentioned, as the other gentleman mentioned, does not have that facility. You have 120 volts at 30 amps versus 120 volts at 15 or 20, depending on the configuration of the socket, okay? So you don't have 240 to work with. So what you can do now on the generator, get the NEMA number. It's embossed in the plastic of that receptacle, and you need to get the male plug that plugs into that and get the one off the generator transfer unit. Again, get the one that joins that one, and then you're going to have to take a piece of cable with three conductors is more than you need, but number 10 more than likely. Let me drop. Three conductors, white, black, and green. You don't need the red because you're not going to be connecting that. And you're going to pick on the generator transfer unit three conductors and carry that continuity, that closed circuit from the generator to that. Okay? Now, as Richard had made mention, is a good possibility, I have to see the generator transfer unit, that if the red leg is left off, half of that unit won't be operating. Chances are, I have to see the schematic, how it's laid out, okay? However, it can be done that way. If you're going to be operating 120 volts, you may be taking only two or three of the circuits. You probably won't be using all of them anyway, and then you can go ahead and do what you want. Now, that bar can be removed off the one of the double pole arrangements, and you'll have six, usually it's six, all single pole circuits. Then what you're going to have to do internally in the generator transfer unit is place a jumper in there from the one source, one live leg, to feed the other three that have been abandoned because the red wire is missing. Do you follow what I'm saying? Back to you, Dick.
KD2HUC with a comment.
KC2MDP also with a comment.
Okay, KD2HUC and MDP in that order. HUC, start up with your comment. Start up with your name, sir, and then your comment.
Hey, Dick. Your name is Steve. My comment is that it is not a good practice to try and jump the phases together in the transfer switch. The best thing that he can do is have an electrician come back and tell him to convert the installation for 120 volts. And the reason for that is that the neutral is rated to carry the unbalanced current that occurs between the phases. That balance doesn't occur if you don't have the 240 volts. So essentially, you can overload the neutral because basically the anything that's carried on both phase A and phase B across the 240 volts, the neutral doesn't have to carry. So when you start to pump out the power, you know, if he's only got things rated in there for 20 amps because he's expecting the electrician wired it for 240 volts, and he goes in and he just puts a jumper, now that neutral could end up burning on him. So my advice to him is to have the electrician come back and tell him to convert the setup and make sure all his branch circuits are balanced correctly for straight 120 volts, not that they're balanced across 240 volt system. KD2 HEC, back to net.
Very fine and good information, Steve. However, there's one other safety item here, one other item in his favor, and that is, I think he said he's only buying 3,000 watts. I'm not sure, but we're going to find that out. If he's only buying 3,000 watts, then he doesn't have the ability to overload that neutral circuit. And the nice thing about having an undersized generator is that if the residents of the house turn on too many things at once, and say the generator is good for 3,000 watts, and the family turns on 4,000 watts of load, it doesn't create smoke and flames. The generator is horsepower limited. It'll simply stall. And I've done that on many occasions, so it's almost self-protecting. And some of them even contain a circuit breaker. So one of the things that we discovered after Superstorm Sandy is there's a huge difference in philosophy when you're putting a generator in your house. Let me drop it. A super conservative person adds up every single appliance in the house, even the 220-volt dryer and the electric range and the oven, adds up everything. And he comes up with a great big number, 20,000 watts. And he goes out and buys a 20,000-watt generator. And it's something he's going to use on average, he's going to use it a couple of hours per year, if you know what I mean. So it's really not justified. And in the case of Superstorm Sandy, people soon discovered that when you've got a 20,000-watt generator, it's sucking up gasoline like crazy, and now you're going to spend the rest of your life standing on gas lines with a can in your hand trying to get enough fuel to keep the thing running. The other philosophy is the Spartan philosophy. You buy only a couple of kilowatts worth of generator because you don't have to live in the lap of luxury during those very few periods of time in which we on Long Island are without power. I mean, you can camp out in your own house as long as you can keep the food from spoiling in the refrigerator, occasionally turn on the furnace so you're not freezing in the wintertime, and turn on some lights and occasionally watch the television. That's the majority of the creature comforts. You don't have to run everything. And when you take one of these couple of kilowatt generators, and some of them like Honda really sip the gasoline at a very slow rate, and now you're not standing on gas lines, and you have the possibility of sampling the gasoline out of your automobile tank. It's not easy to get there, but there's ways of sampling that in order to keep the whole operation going. So because he's going to be possibly limited in horsepower and kilowatts, wiring all the house, the A circuit and the B circuit in parallel, might not, after proper study, might not be exceeding the current capability of the neutral circuit. Let's see what Steve's got to say on this. K2MDP, I think I've got your prefix correct. As a KC2MDP, you know who you are, Steve. Mr. MDP, K2RIW.
Repeater, timeout.
I timed it out. You got it, Steve, number two, MDP.
Yes, Dick, very good. Yes, Mike, Delta Papa, you got it. Yeah, what it sounds like, he's probably got a 30-amp generator, and I don't know if he has the SJ cord to go from the house to the generator yet, but this is what I normally do in a situation when I run into this, is I'll take the four-wire twist lock, which goes into the manual transfer switch. I'll get four-conductor SJ cord. It's a lot easier with four-conductor. Red, black, go to your two hots, green, of course, your ground, white, your neutral, and at the other end, the three-prong plug, it's usually a good-sized plug. So what I'll do there is, of course, neutral goes to neutral, ground goes to ground, and then the red and the black, which would give you 240, I just put to the one side of the of the prong on the generator. So, in other words, the generator is feeding both legs of that 240, and that way down the line you want to change the generator to a 240. You move, somebody else uses, you're not creating a problem later on. Obviously, you buy a 240-volt generator, 110-volt plug is not going to fit in that generator, so they're going to know something's up anyway, and they'll have to change the plug. Back to you, Dick.
Thank you, Steve. Eric, and then Vito in that order. Eric, KE2EJ, go right ahead.
Correct me if I didn't hear this right, but it sounds like he's got a 2-kilowatt Honda generator, which is an inverter, actually. The generator, believe it or not, like DC, goes into a nice little switching device and it becomes a nice sine wave, actually. It's a pretty clean sine wave on the output. If I had to draw more than 2 kilowatts out of it, I think the number is like 2,100 watts. I think it's got, you know, circuit breakers in it, and it just pops. The motor keeps going, but it's not making juice for you. Tying the two sides together, or leaving one side open, is a worse idea than tying the two sides together. I'll give you a reason why. Some 240-volt devices, like dryers and stovetops and things like that, they also have... they actually leave that stuff across the line at to run the computers that are in them today, and there's little power supplies. So what happens is it looks like a big dropping resistor going to the other side that's not being fed, and you can do some nasty things that way. So that's not really a very cool idea. Having, you know, two properly fed 120-volt lines that have the correct relationship to each other is really the right way to go. Tying them together can create other kinds of problems, especially if things are done split, where you have a combination 240-110, and they use the neutral or ground as a return. You can get into trouble there. So, KTRIW, KTRJ.
By the way, I think I heard Pete say he's thinking of buying a 3-kilowatt generator. And one of the things he's concerned about is the sine wave it puts out. And as Eric was indicating, almost all motor generator sets you can buy these days really are an inverter, and they put out an extremely clean sine wave.
Find anything bigger than 2 kilowatts is an inverter.
Understand. But they put out an extremely clean sine wave by the standards of emergency power. The only place I know of where the sine wave out of a motor generator set gives you some grief is on a very persnickety circuit, which is a traveling wave tube amplifier. If they see the slightest little snicket after, well, what's the word I'm looking at? Slightest little bit of non-linearity of the sine wave, they will trip out and go into the standby mode, a traveling wave tube amplifier. He's not powering one of those. That's not a problem. So when it comes to almost all the appliances in the house, I think they're going to be happy with the quality of the sine wave coming out of your generator. I don't think you can buy a generator that puts out square waves. Yes, you can buy electronic inverters, something that starts off with 12-volt batteries and puts out 120 volts. Some of those put out quasi-square waves. But rotary machinery almost puts out a pure sine wave, in my opinion. Let's see what Vito's got to say about this. And, you know, we're looking forward to when you come back to work, Vito. I know you need some time off because of what you've been through. And which Home Depot store are you at? Because I guarantee there's a number of people hearing you who are going to say, I want to talk to that man face-to-face. Mr. PJF, the B2 PJF, K2RIW, you got it, Vito.
WA2PJF returning. All right, all I want to say with all due respect to Steve, okay, and I apologize, I'm going to side with Eric. I don't like the idea about tying the two legs together. This is why I said buy a 3-conductor cord, not a 4, where you haven't got that red wire in your face. What I had said about the jumper in between was to, for example, I built my own homebrew, homemade generator transfer unit. I don't like the ones they sell in the stores. Mine is much more involved. And it's my generator is only 3 kW, which is only 33 amps total, and it suffices for my purpose. And I drive this this control unit with 120 volts, but it's a 240 volt panel. So I had to run a jumper from one side, from one phase to the other, get the other two legs, no, the other two phases, other phase to be activated. So I have, everything is 120 volts. Yes, Steve is correct. The neutral wire, its purpose is to keep phase A and B in check and in balance, like a seesaw. If you had no neutral, for example, in your home, or if the neutral wire were to break or come open at the panel or wherever it comes in, you can have a high voltage on phase A and a low voltage on phase B, and the lights would burn out on one side or your appliances would be destroyed on the other side. Nothing would be very dim. The lamps would be dim. You would have 50 volts, for example, and maybe 150 on the other side, or 160. So that neutral is very important for that application. Okay. Now, another thing I need to tell you is that the SJ cords, as Steve had mentioned, yes, that means service junior. Junior means 300 volts. S means service. We have the fatter ones that are 600 volts also, but they normally don't fit in these plugs. Let me drop. Those wires, now keep in mind, those pieces of cable, they're rubber. They're not THHN, thermoplastic high-heat nylon. So what happens is that when you buy a 10-3, you're not buying a 30-amp piece of wire. You're buying around a 22-amp piece of wire. At that point, and that's where it cuts off, 22, 23 amps, and starts to get very hot. So you haven't got that facility, that luxury of 30 amps, unless you want to, which is not recommended, to buy the actual cable you put inside the walls for dryers, HM, the orange, now color-coded in orange, which signifies number 10 wire, then you have your full 30 amps to work with. So keeping that in mind as well, and the length of the cable plays an important part with the resistance, very, very important. I recommend this to customers. Something else really quick is that if you don't have to get so sophisticated, if you don't have to get involved with generator transfer units, then do what most people do, get yourself some good quality 12-gauge extension cords. Let me drop. 12-gauge extension cords as opposed to 14, and use those, plug them into the receptacles, and run across the floor into your refrigerator, across your kitchen floor, and run to operate a couple of lights to your TV, and be done with it. 50-foot, it's the shorter the better, okay? I recommend that most assuredly. So these are all things you could possibly do. And one final thing, 3kW is not a lot of beans. It's not much power. Really, trust me. I recommend 5 and 6kW generators. Yes, you're right, Dick, that you'll be putting more fuel into it, of course, but you have more facility, you see. And what's going to happen is that when you put a second refrigerator on there, for example, my 3kW ran my oil burner, okay, and my two refrigerators and a light, but that was a great demand on that generator. And I believe what happened was I had a problem with my oil burner because of that. The voltage, I'm guessing, I didn't get a voltmeter to measure it, wasn't what it should have been. And the relay was damaged by this situation when I had the storm. We had that storm several years ago, and I had to have it serviced. And I'm attributing it to the fact that I didn't have the facilities. I use that word facilities to drive everything sufficiently. Back to you, Dick.
I got one last little bit.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that Vito's talking about, 3-5 kilowatts, actually I run 6 kilowatts at home, I have a 4 out of 6, but the point of the inverter is a really smart generator, whereas you literally can run it and it can just sip a gallon of gasoline for almost a whole day, because it's got a DC generator in it and it's doing a conversion, it understands what the demand on it is put on it, and it varies according to the load that's placed on it. So if you don't load that generator down, it doesn't use much gas, and then as you finally get up to its full capability, it seems to be somewhat more efficient than your traditional genset. So that's why you're seeing them. But you don't see them in the sizes that you would need to run a house unless you're going to buy from a you know, a big company like Generac or a few others that do actually make them. But, you know, if you go into Home Depot, you see their version of gen set without the inverter. It's just a big gold, actually natural gas engine or gasoline, whatever you want to rent from, connected to a shaft, connected to an alternator. So that's it. And the other thing about the inverter is that they're very frequency stable. They can actually be externally lost if you need to do that. KQRIW, KQ2J.
Okay, you guys have supplied a lot of information. I know by now Pete's head is spinning a little bit. We've made it a little more complicated than it has to be. But when the smoke settles, I think you're doing the right thing, Pete. I've always had standby generators, and ever since Hurricane Gloria, way back in 1985. And so with a little bit of care, they can give you a lot of comfort during a winter power outage, if you know what I mean, because of an ice storm. You probably have some additional questions here, Pete. WA2PAA, WB2PAA, K2RAW. Go ahead, Pete. Good question you've been asking us.
K2RAW for the question.
Pete first. Go ahead, Pete.
Okay, Jesse and the group. Yeah, that's a lot of information there. And, I tried to get a hold of my electrician two or three times, and he never got back to me. So that's why I decided to talk to TechNet. And I was looking for an easy fix, but it sounds like it's not that easy. I'd just like to know what Home Depot Vito works at when he gets back to work. And Honda, I need an inverted generator because of my electronic furnace. And Honda makes a 3,000-watt Electrostart generator. They also make, I believe, an 8,000, but I'm looking to for 3,000 for fuel economy, and I was thinking tri-fuel, but I can't find an inverted generator tri-fuel. So back to you, Dick, WV2PAA. Thank you, everybody.
One more final comment when it's my turn, Dick.
Okay, we're going to take Mr. IZ, I think it was next. K2IZ, I think it was. Is that you, John, in Copeg? K2LAW in the TechNet?
K2 India Foxtrot.
Okay, K2 India Foxtrot. Please give us your name, and then I think you've got a question on this subject. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Sorry, I wanted to let it drop. Yes, first name is Chris. Basically, here everybody's talking about sine wave output inverter type generators. I've seen others, I've seen some advertisements saying that if you needed more power, you could always daisy chain them or somehow add one on as your needs increase. Is that that facility, would that be manufacturer specific, or is that something that goes across the industry? Is there a standard for that? I was just wondering if anybody would know offhand. K2IF.
They can be externally locked, and they can be ganged together in parallel.
Yeah, but those are very specific machines, Eric. I don't.
Period.
Chris, I don't recommend this. Maybe other people have other opinions. If you think you need more kilowatts, then buy a more kilowatt generator and trade in the one you've got. To start running generators in parallel at a domestic installation in the backyard of your house, I think there's a lot more involved here. In the case of a commercial installation broadcast center where Eric is, yes, he's willing to buy machines that can be synchronized. Give us a few words on this one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RAW in the TechNet.
K2RAW, K2EJ. Well, Honda's interest is they're really selling to contractors and things of that nature. So one of the nice things about inverters is they have no fear of big inductive loads. They handle them very well, and they handle the additional surges that are placed on them, you know, for a reasonable period of time. You know, we're talking milliseconds here. but the way the system is designed, by the way, you have to use their harness when they when you put them together. It will take you from, you can put two of them together, get 4 kilowatts, or put 3 of them together, get 6 kilowatts. And you know, their intention is that they're making their product to serve all, so to speak, and that's one of the ways to do it. And actually, it works quite well. I've seen a couple of installations where people have put 3 of them together because they need the power in it. And they're on some real heavy inductive loads, and it works well.
My first question, Eric, is what happens if you've got 3 of them in parallel, so to speak, all running in synchronization, and one of the 3 runs out of...
The computer shuts it down.
So the one that runs out of fuel, you're saying the computer will automatically take that one offline? Is that what you're saying?
Believe it or not, the system measures the load that's on it. If it exceeds, you know, if you lose a generator and it exceeds the current load that is being drawn, it shuts the whole system down. If it sees that the load is less, then why do you have 3 generators in the first place? It'll keep going. So you kind of get the idea. They kind of thought about it when they made it. It's a pretty darn good product.
Now let me hit you with a specific here, Eric. I've got a pair of 2 kilowatt generators running in parallel. I got 4 kilowatts of capability. Right now my load happens to be 1.8 kilowatts. And one of those 2 generators runs out of fuel. What does the system do in that situation? The one remaining generator can pick up the load, but the one generator that's no longer being powered, is it freewheeling? Or does it electronically disconnect itself from the circuit? What would happen in that case, Eric? K2EJ, K2RIW?
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, let's think about this in a different way, because normally you think of a genset with a motor with a shaft connected to an alternator, always permanently connected. You know, if it stops spinning, you're done. And the frequency goes, you know, lower and lower as the thing winds down, and the amplitude drops. Here, you can think of it this way. Actually, you can put a battery system in this stuff. You've got a motor that's driving a DC generator that's, in essence, making 12 volts, and you've got a electronic converter, which is nothing more than a bunch of transistors, and a multivibrator that's running it, and you're supplying the collectors or the drains of those transistors with that 12 volts that you're generating. So if one generator, if the computer stops one generator and it feels that the load is fine, it'll keep the other one going. So, you know, even if you had like a battery system, you could lose both generators for the moment until the battery runs down, but that's not where we're going with it. But you get the idea. K2IW, K2EJ.
Two-E-O, Dick, I'm getting a 1,000-cycle note. Do I have a problem or do we have a problem?
No, there is no 1,000-cycle on the repeater at this time that I know of. Erica, we've got an ambiguity here. The word inverter. In the case of the rotary machine that's in your automobile, which has a belt driven by the motor, and it is a alternator, and it makes the 12 volts at the 60 amperes or whatever to charge your battery and run the car. That's an alternator. The circuit that takes 12 volts and converts it into 120 volt 60 cycle AC, I guess that's an inverter. Are you telling me that the modern day motor generator sets have an inverter, not a rotary shaft turning an alternator? I mean, all of the motor generator sets that I have used in the last 10 years, 20 years, ever since Hurricane Gloria, 1985, really, there is a shaft turning a rotary machine that's generating 60 cycle approximately sine wave AC. Are you telling me the modern day machines don't do it that way? KE2EJ, K2LAW in the deck net.
That's precisely what I'm telling you. The motor gen part of it, if you want to call it an alternator because it's more efficient to take 3 phases and put them through rectifiers and make DC out of it, yeah, okay, we'll go with that. it actually takes up less space than a single phase DC generator. Yes, really, you could stop the motors and just feed the damn 12 volts into it and get your AC out of it. And if you're, the reason for this, of course, is efficiency. The amount of gasoline you use is totally load dependent in a different way than it is with the mechanical chip. You are wasting a lot of energy. If you go to Home Depot, or I don't think they have them, but if you go to any number of places and you look at the Honda generator, just small little things, they look like suitcases, and they make good kilowatts, and they're not very heavy, and they don't drink gasoline. They're incredibly efficient. So, yeah, think of it as, you know, some electronics is making the AC, not the motor. Back to you, Dick.
Let me go one step further here. Are you telling me that in the residential type motor generator set, is what we used to call them, that's generating for me roughly 60 cycle, roughly 120 volts AC in order to power the appliances of my house, are you telling me I can no longer buy a rotary machine generating that sine wave of 60 cycles? I can no longer buy that? What year did those disappear? KE2EJ, K2LAW.
That's ridiculous.
Yes, you still can buy the noisy, smelly thing. If you ever heard one of these things, you know, you didn't go to field day this year. They actually had a couple of them out there. They are so quiet, you don't even know that they're running. They're very small, they're very efficient. And they're really expensive, too. They're more expensive than the state motor gen set. In some respects, so. But yeah, you can go out and buy a gas-hungry gas guzzler. You know, your 6-kilowatt generator probably has a 4-gallon tank on it, and it lasts you maybe 5 or 6 hours before you have to go feed it some more.
In the past, 90% of the noise coming out of these machines was due to a extremely inadequate muffler system. These inexpensive machines didn't have much of a muffler. Way back in those days, Honda was making 1-2 kilowatt type machines, rotary machine, not an inverter, but because they had done an extremely good job of the muffler, they were quiet as all hell. So the fact that it is a rotary machine making the 60 cycles doesn't mean it has to be noisy, in my opinion. You put the right kind of a muffler on there, and the remaining noise from the chassis of the motor is rather small, particularly there's a huge difference on whether or not it's a 3600 or an 1800 RPM type machine, how many poles are in that alternator, but they can be quiet with a good muffler. Do you disagree on that one, Eric?
Not at all. I believe it's still the same engine. That's why they're so quiet. The way it's laid out, but it's the electronics that makes the juice for you, and you can phase them together with precision. You can even externally lock it to an external source if you want. So, you know, that's the way they're going. And I'm pretty sure that right now they're pretty much the only people that are selling it like that. I'm sure somebody's going to come out with one pretty soon that, give them a little competition, but they've got a pretty good capture on the market from what although I'm not a marketing expert in any way, but from what I see, they don't seem to stay in stock in too many places too often.
I heard somebody say this is ridiculous, and does somebody disagree about alternators versus inverters on these motor generator sets? Give me your call, that is the name right now, K2LIW and the TechNet.
Hey, Jake, maybe you can. Yeah, how are you going to convert chemical energy into electrical energy without the generator? It's magic.
Okay, that was KD2 blank, blank, blank. You were 85% noise, 15% audio. We only heard a few of those words. Is there anything you can do to give us a little bit more steam? Because we're hearing an awful lot of noise out of your signal. Kilo Delta 2, blank, 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 K2LAW in the TechNet.
JF any better?
Okay. You said it so fast, it sounded like K2JF, K2 Juliet Foxtrot. Somehow I don't believe that. Over to you, and give me your name, sir.
That's Kilo Delta 2 Juliet Alpha Foxtrot. Name's Chris. Dick, we've spoken before. Is my audio coming in any better now?
Huge improvement. Tell me what you did, and then please repeat your information, Chris. We're glad to hear from you.
I held the radio a little closer to my face. my question was, well, I had a question about Voyager, but that was early on, and I'm sure you'll bring that topic back up again. But my question was, how do you convert chemical energy into electrical energy without a generator, without a rotary alternator? I don't understand what he's talking about.
Okay, Chris, by the way, when you held it closer to your face, maybe it's a handy talkie, you're now in a much better position and you're giving us plenty of RF. Before, your signal was noisy because you were giving the repeater very little RF energy. Almost all of these motor generator sets that we're talking about have a real internal combustion engine using some kind of a fuel creating horsepower, which runs an alternator, which now is one of two styles. The majority of the ones that I used to use, the alternator generated 120 volt 60 cycles directly, and it was connected with a shaft to that Briggs & Stratton motor, or the Tecumseh motor. Eric is now telling us that instead, what they're doing nowadays is that the alternator is still there, but it's generating 12 volts instead of 120 volts, 12 volts DC, similar to the alternator that's in your automobile. And that in turn is charging a battery in some cases. That in turn is running a inverter that converts the 12 volts into 120 volts, 60 cycle AC by electronics. I'm not as happy with that approach, although Eric is leading us to believe that that's the way they're all going these days. I'd like to believe the real motor, the real rotary machine generating by way of an alternator, 60 cycle, 120 volts directly, I'd like to believe that machine still exists. And that's what I've been using all these years. There's a lot more to this. And Pete, as you can tell, you've got to do a little bit more research. I don't think you've bought any of the hardware yet, but I can tell you're right at the threshold of buying it. And Vito, I also want to know, which Home Depot do you work at? Because I'm going to be going to that one from time to time. WA2PJF, awful glad you're coming back. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yes, WA2PJF returning. Yes, I'm in the Bayshore one here on Sunrise Highway by ShopRite, just a little bit west of Saxon Avenue and between Saxon and Brentwood Road. So the Bayshore store on the north side of the highway is where I am in the electrical department. One final thing before I just sign off here is that in reference to the amount of power, this is important. Pete should know this. That, for example, if you know, firstly, that everything has a tolerance, and usually the number is about 20% on the average. If you're getting a 3 kW generator, you need to calculate your load, and that 3 kW generator should not be supplying any more than, safely, 2.4 kW. 600 watts is standing aside as the tolerance to keep the generator running cooler and less of a demand on it. If you need more than, you need at least 3 kW generator, you need to go to a 4 kW generator, okay, to take in that tolerance. It's very, very important. You should have something that, you know, keep that in mind, okay? Just an FYI, if I may say so. And one final thing, inverters, from I could be 100% wrong in what I'm going to say. I'm not 100% sure. But inverters, I believe, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, don't put out a sine wave, they put out a square wave. So if you're operating a light bulb or something, it makes no difference, but it could affect other appliances that need a sine wave. If I'm wrong, someone correct me. That's about all I have to say. Back to net control.
Yes, with info.
Yeah, it turns out it puts out a quasi, it's a multi-step square wave-like thing that approximates a sine wave. I think Eric's going to clear that up for us, and there's another person who's going to add some more info. KE2EJ first. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, Vito. You guys sell a number of different types of Infinities. Actually, there's one, I think it's a, who makes it? It's a cat. It's a yellow thing. It's really close to a sine wave. It's, as Dick said, it's a pseudo-step. It's actually smoothed by some inductors in there, but it's not a perfect sine wave. What comes out of the Honda inverter generators, okay, which is not something that you really hook up to a battery and get output. This is a gen set. It has a lot of accessories, but this gen set produces a very pure, low distortion. I think the distortion is well under 1%. I can look up the specs for it. And it's very precisely frequency controlled, so it doesn't wiggle with the motor wiggling. So that's the difference between them. And by the way, a lot of the types of inverters that you buy for your car, that's 100 watts or 300 watts, so you can run your charger for your laptop or whatever, those things are pretty damn close to a square wave, and I don't like them. And you can usually listen to them on your radio. So. K2IW, K2J.
You said 100 watts. You meant 100 amperes. Most of the...
No, I meant 100 watts, like, you know, in the car, so you can plug your charger in.
These are watts, not the amps. Watts, he's right.
Okay. When you go to your parts store to buy an alternator to replace the one that's in your car, they ask you, do you want the 60-ampere version or the 100-ampere version? So, in some respects, they're rated in current output capability. And if it does put out 100 amperes, in each of my Toyota cars,
there's not the alternators.
Talking about inverters, you hook up to your battery and you get AC out of
it. Okay, agreed. And yes, I'm talking about an inverter. Okay, one other thing when you're worried about sizing the proper proper motor generator set, Vito, there's another great big variable here, and that is whenever I have power outage, like I did during Superstorm Sandy or during Hurricane Gloria, I play power czar. By that I mean, I tell the family what they're allowed to turn on at this time. By me being the czar, way back in the days when I had a really dinky generator, it was a Granger, bottom of the line Granger 1800 watt motor generator set running in my backyard. And as long as I played power czar and turned on things in the right order, I could run my my oil-fired warm air heater system with its great big blower. I could run the refrigerator. I couldn't start both of them simultaneously. I started the furnace first, then allowed the refrigerator to start, and so on. And once those are running, one or two small lights could be turned on in the television set. So if you're controlling what's going on, you don't have to live in the lamp of luxury. I mean, there's only certain things you really need. You don't want the food spoiling, so they want the refrigerator running. And you don't want the pipes to freeze, you want the furnace to run. Those are the vital things. After that, the luxury things like some lights and the television set and some radios, you don't have to turn on everything at once as long as you're controlling these people. People are very adaptable. They're controllable. Somebody had another comment they wanted to make. Who was that? K2IW in the TechNet?
Got part of that problem. Like,
is AC2IS with a comment?
I have something else to say also, Dick.
Okay, yeah, Bill, AC2IS. You're sounding good these days. You put up a real antenna. Go ahead, Bill.
Still the same old mag mount here sitting in the living room. But, I researched the Honda 2000 a while back, and it seemed like there were two slightly different model numbers. You could get the usual Honda 2000, but there was a cable. You could buy a slightly different model, and there was a cable to link the two. They would have the motor generator set like you were talking about. They would rectify their outputs, and then there'd be an AC output coming out of just one of the two Hondas after they would link their DC outputs, the rectified DC outputs, and then give you a single inverted AC output from that. That's how the Honda 2000s worked. I don't know how anything else works or if that's common. I think when the Honda 2000 first came out, it was somewhat exceptional. AC2IS.
Okay, I thank you for that information, Bill. And maybe what Eric, maybe what Rich is talking about, there's a slight hum on my signal tonight. I'm not quite sure where it's coming from, but I'm generating it. Nobody else is. Go ahead, Vito. WA2.
A fan, Dick.
Yeah, that could be a fan. WA2PJF, K2RIW. Go ahead, Vito.
As you're talking about what you said when you had these storms with this generator and you were telling your family not to turn certain things on, I'm very inquisitive about this. Now, the only way you can put yourself into that dilemma, I use that word dilemma, that's the correct word to use, is, let me ask, were you backfeeding into a dryer receptacle or a stove receptacle, thus feeding the entire fuse panel and opening the main to get offline, but feeding the entire fuse panel where anything in the house could be turned on and thus creating a problem with the generator? That's a no-no if that's what you did. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right, Vito. I was violating the living daylights out of normal power laws and code and whatever. I was backfeeding the house. I had made sure I disconnected it from the rest of the community, and I was backfeeding it, and I wasn't using a transfer relay. This is way back in Hurricane Gloria when I only owned a 1,800-watt Granger bottom-of-the-line motor generator set. And so I knew I was taking a risk doing that, and in my so-called generator news that I was publishing for people who were buying these 4-kilowatt generators that we were selling, the 550 of them after Hurricane Gloria, I was telling people not to do that. I didn't insist on that quite as much as I did about insisting that they not even consider putting the motor generator set inside of the house, in the basement, for instance, or in the garage. A ridiculous number of people wanted to do that. And, oh, boy, we would have had all kinds of carbon monoxide poisonings and electrocutions and whatever. A motor generator set is only to be used outdoors, in my opinion. And some of the more enthusiastic people literally built a doghouse in the backyard, which housed the motor generator set. Anybody have any further comments? K2RIW in the TechNet. Go ahead, Eric.
You know, the one thing that I did that actually got a lot of people upset when the power went out is that because I rebuilt the house and there's not a single CFL or incandescent lamp in the entire house, if I turn every light on in every room, it uses about 150 watts altogether.
Yeah, that's the right way to do it. But by the way, I was backfeeding. I have the ability to run an electric range, and so I was violating the living daylights out of laws. Don't do as I said. I'm telling you I did it, and I knew I was taking a huge risk in the process of doing it. And because I know the wiring of my main fuse panel and so on, there was a certain degree of slight increase in safety as a normal situation, but I know I was pushing my luck. Pete, as you discover more of this information that you're going to be gathering in order to do your installation, please check with us periodically and give us an update, because a number of other people are in the exact same situation you're in. Back to you for a final on this one, Pete. Glad you asked these questions. WA2PAA, K2LIW, WB2PAA, K2LIW. Go ahead, Pete.
K2RIW, WB2PAA. A lot of information tonight. I never thought I'd get all this information, but probably I'll talk to Vito in a week or two, and hopefully he'll be back to work. And I'm going to try to get a hold of my electrician to see what he says. Like I mentioned before, I tried him twice, and he never returned a call. So I thank everybody for your help. And I'm sorry it took so much time for the other gentleman that's on your list. So thanks again, WB2PAA.
WQIS with another comment.
Bill recognized. No apology required, Pete. You didn't demand the extra time. We took the extra time because there's a lot of people with a lot of opinions on this subject. After Hurricane Gloria and after Superstorm Sandy, whenever we got on the subject of generators, oh, it went on to a ridiculous number of hours. Lots of information flowed in a hurry. By way of that website, www.amateurradio.tangovictor. A few days downrange from now, when this particular recording appears on that website, you can play it back and then fast forward and go to those particular sections over and over again and suck the information out of it. A lot of information flew by real fast, unless you're a real good shorthand note taker. Guarantee some of it got missed. Go ahead, Bill. AC2IS, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Hey, Dick, I was just hearing what you were saying about backfeeding a panel. Yes, and, you know, we understand that's a bad idea. But just wanted to comment that I got a gas range installed recently. Gas supply is new to this house. It should not consume electricity. You should be able to cook with it. However, seems kind of semi-typical, if not across the board nowadays, that gas ranges require power. If there is, because there's no pilot light, that's an electric start, and if there's no power as a safety measure, there are electric valves that close and prevent you from using your range. So when I had my my gas range put in, there's an outlet that goes with it, and I made sure that that did not get just hardwired in, but there was a plug put on it so that in the event that I had to use the range, I'd be able to plug it into an extension cord that would go to a generator. AC2IS.
Very crafty, Bill, and that's going to make things easy for you. Also, see, Dave, N2APG, he also changed the wiring of his furnace so that he has the ability to feed it by way of an extension cord. I think it's an oil-fired, or maybe it's a gas-fired, but his furnace for his house in Massapequa, he has the ability to feed it with an extension cord because he's interrupted the normal wiring, which is done through a piece of BX cable that's, completely sealed. Okay, that was an exciting bit of information on that particular subject, and so that section went for almost 2.5 hours. I hope we haven't put Ed to sleep. He's the next person on our list.
Quick comment, Dick.
Go ahead, John.
Dick, in the style that you performed for your backfeeding your panel, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. It is completely safe if it's done properly. Your main is open. All the breakers are opened. You feed it with your generator supply through a breaker system to the main bus in that load center, and you selectively turn on the breakers one at a time. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, and it is safe, so I wouldn't worry about it at all, as long as you know what you're doing.
I have the law on a lot of wheels,
Yeah, I know there are certain communities, there are certain codes in certain communities, certain boroughs, maybe, where it is considered foxing the rules as I see it, so it's not recommended. For somebody who has worked with power all his life, like you have, John, I wouldn't worry about you doing it. The general person who barely understands the intricacies of a motor generator set, to have him attempt to do that himself without an electrician installing a real transfer switch is highly unrecommended, in my opinion. So we got to be careful on how we recommend that one. I think it's time we go to the very next person who's been waiting a long time, Ed, KC2PYT, K2RAW. I hope you're still with us, Ed. And once again, congratulations on the new family member. You got it, Ed.
A very, very quick query, Dick.
K2PYT, I don't know if you want to take that guy.
Go ahead, Rich. Try to keep it brief.
Very, very brief, Dick. For a long time, I was getting the tone, blanking out the repeat. generator. What, do we have a guest, or is it me? And then turn it over to the other station. I was worried I have a problem, and so we helped.
Didn't hear anything, did you, Dick?
I'm continuously running full duplex there, Rich. I'm continuously hearing the output of the repeater in real time while I'm talking to it. I heard no tone. I hear a little bit of a hum in the background from the blower on my particular transmitter, but there is no 1KC note in there. Ed, KC2PYT, K2REW. Go ahead, Ed.
Okay, thank you very much for the well wishes and the congratulations. So my question tonight has to do with super heterodyne transmitters and receivers. I know the general principle where you perform your modulation, you know, on some lower frequency, and then by mixing it with a higher frequency, you create the target frequency. So you've got your two frequencies. You have a pure sine wave or whatever on your higher frequency. You mix it with your lower frequency voice modulated signal, and you in that way produce a frequency in the middle that is where you want it to be. What I don't understand is why you do that.
Okay, the word super heterodyne has got multiple meanings here, Ed. In general, when a person talks about super heterodyne, he's talking about a receiver. And 90-some-odd% of the super heterodyne receivers start off with an RF frequency, like 146.85 megahertz. By way of mixing it with a local oscillator, it gets heterodyne down to 10.7 megacycles as the first IF. You go through a couple of stages of filtering and amplification at 10.7. Then it goes into a second mixer where the 10.7 megacycles is mixed with another LO, and the second IF is 455 KC. The reason for doing that is that when you mix to a lower frequency, good superheterodyne receiver design, most of the time, the first IF is 10% of the RF frequency. And when there's a second IF, the second IF beats down to approximately 10% of the first IF frequency. You go to this 90%, 10% ratio of frequencies for a very good reason. Let me drop. At the lower frequency, you can get tremendous improvement in filtering characteristics. If I had to design a filter that's exactly 3 kilohertz wide, and I'm doing it at 455 KC, it's extremely easy with modern-day circuits. If I didn't beat it down to a lower frequency, if it was a TRF radio, tuned radio frequency, in other words, if the radio received 146.85 and every stage of amplification is 146.85, and now you try to make all those stages have enough gain, the average receiver has 120 dB of gain, and all the gain is on the same frequency, unless you're extremely careful, that thing is called oscillator, it's going to feed back on itself. Second of all, you try to make a 3 kilohertz filter with steep skirts on the sides of the filter, and you're doing it at 146.85 megahertz, I don't think there's enough Q in the world allow you to design that frequency. So by beating it down to a lower frequency, gain is a lot cheaper, gain is a lot easier, you've got various frequencies flowing around in the receiver, everything is not on the same frequency, so the whole thing's not an oscillator. Gain is easier, filtering is easier, and for a whole bunch of reasons, you come out better. So the super heterodyne principle, and I'm trying to think of now, I think it's Armstrong who invented that, a really brilliant idea, because the radio receivers they used before then suffered a lot of grief of the forms that I've been describing to you. And when it comes to, let me drop. How could I, for instance, mix a 146.85 megacycle signal with a 136?